Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I get to go for it. Let's talk about.
Other than that, let's talk about great.
Producer Brad really milking the best out of me here. You know, all those shining things coming to light. Jesus Christ!
It's a beautiful life.
Let's
beautiful.
Let's talk about some other nuclear holocaust.
I just gave Benny some depressing news, which has nothing to do with podcasting.
I mean, it could.
And thankfully, it doesn't really have much to do with me. But I'm glad to be here.
Yeah,
above ground. Glad.
It's actually a perfect set. We start talking about. I'm totally having a midlife crisis. Did you have one?
I think I stayed kind of so intensely, like my life just kind of kept churning over so quickly that I think now might be having a midlife crisis.
Oh, okay, you're having one now.
Yeah, like now that my daughter's 12, you know, and like, I mean, because things were, you know, I didn't have time to have a midlife crisis. And like when I hit middle age, I was still like kind of a teenager.
Yeah, but can't you just be like going through the motions as like a father and a family man to just be dead on the inside? Isn't that also a midlife crisis?
I think that's called general parenting 101.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it steals a little bit of your soul, Betty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just crazy to think sometimes like that when you're done with all like the really hard parenting work, then you just like start dying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a weird one. But it's a weird one to swallow.
But there's somebody there to take care of you.
Sure. It's very nice.
Because everybody's going to be in that same position, and some people might not have,
right?
You know, somebody to come look out for them.
This makes me think of Jade from Oso Oso.
Oh, God.
Because we did get deep in this conversation.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't fluff. We got into it.
Oh, by no means.
We got into it. He's from Long Island, and I have an instinct always to, like, make fun of Long Island.
Well,
it's because I'm raised by, like, proper New Yorkers, and even though I was from New Jersey, I had this, you know, irrational distaste for outer boroughs and even New Jersey because of it. In my elementary school, I used to tell kids I was from New York, even though I wasn't.
Did. Just
because my parents thought it was so cool and where I was. And I was this like Philistine out in New Jersey. And as I've grown, I realize like Long Island and New Jersey are definitely more the same than different.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And the thing, and you see the same kind of things that pop out of it because it's like these enclaves of middle class, you know, kind of areas that are so close to the city that like these interesting things like can bloom. It's like having the access to city culture, but then also having access to like a garage and parents who buy you guitars.
Absolutely. I think if you, you know, I mean, this is the thing is, yeah, I've lived in New York now for decades and obviously Jersey and Long Island are a long-running joke, right? But the truth is, if you look at the per capita of like where the most creative people have come from, at least in my experience, like that's where they're from, dude.
Yeah.
Like, and it's exactly what you're saying. Like they have a little bit of leeway and freedom to fucking stretch out, which, you know, as we know, is impossible living in New York City.
Impossible.
But they have access to
quick train right away. Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I like kind of discovered punk rock. I grew up like not in the middle of fucking nowhere. I mean, I kind of grew up in the sticks, but it was in Massachusetts. I remember being angry and being like, you mean this has been going on now?
Once you found
it. Yeah, like,
because it was so
somebody
close.
Turned me onto the Clash, you know, like, and yeah. They were into like their third record by that point, I think, you know, and like, I was like, this has been happening. And I'd always kind of felt out of place amongst these fucking hillbillies that I grew up with. Like, couldn't figure out why I didn't like classic rock, you know?
Right. What was like the band that people were, was it, that's why you hate Zeppelin, right? Because when you were growing up.
Well, that's the thing. I can listen to Zeppelin now.
But that was like the cock rock dudes were Zeppelin fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a
but
shame
there was
to
far
hear.
Worse, dude. There was like, yeah. I mean, there was kids listening to bands like Yes and Rush.
Yes. Whoa. Slow down. There is a big difference.
Oh, no, drummer here.
No. There's a big difference between what we're talking. You're talking about two sort of revolutionary prog rock artists. And then Led Zeppelin, like how are those in the same
know,
even?
I lumped them all together.
How are those
it was all
same
the same
umbrella?
Bunch of meatheads that were listening.
You're
to
like anything without the if the singer doesn't have dreads, I just don't want to hear
if
it.
If I can't count the time 1, 2, 3, 4, I don't want to fucking hear it.
Yeah, because you couldn't play it, motherfucker. That's right. Why. So why don't we get into this lovely interview with Jade from Oso Oso?
Let's do it. Hit play.
Boom.
It's going on.
Yeah, it's weird. So I think like now it's gotten to a point where LeBron James and Tom Brady are like rich and powerful enough that they've been able to like tap into whatever the presidents have been using.
Yeah.
Like the last 30, 40 years.
How much do they say that he spends on like his body? A year.
Yeah,
LeBron spends over like $1 million.
Well over, yeah. Yeah, for like these systems he has in place. But he's literally about to shatter like every single like NBA record as far as like minutes and point like compilation statistics.
He's
gonna
break
all of them in the next year or two, which is crazy.
He's worth it, right?
Hey Brad, have you ever known if you say Wilkes Barre, Wilkes Barre? Or Wilkes?
I would say Barre.
You say Wilkes Barre too?
But I have no idea.
I feel like there's been a time in my life I've been definitely yelled at for saying Wilkes Barre. Someone went Wilkes Barre and got like super worked up with me. Like when you go to Newark, Delaware and they're like, New Ark.
What?
I never heard that shit either. That happens for real?
Yeah. Because I went, when you're from New Jersey, you don't even say Newark. Like most people say Newark. Like, it's just this, like, weird, like, hey, I'm from New York.
It's like Nolens.
Yeah, exactly. So, to go down there, and they're like, no. New Ark. I'm like, it's one fucking word. That's just not what you do with that A. You need to capitalize that thing or separate
it. You're saying the locals say New Ark.
Yeah, in Delaware. I mean, whoever lives there that doesn't go to the college, I don't know who that is.
Wait, are we talking about Newark, New Jersey, or New...
No, Newark, New Jersey is pronounced Newark.
Nurk.
Yeah, there's no vowels or anything. It's basically N-W-R-K. But yeah, when you go to Newark, Delaware, you're reprimanded for
still one
the
word.
Same way.
One word?
Yeah, it's the same shit.
Wait, where is Newark, Delaware?
It's like, I don't know. It's part of that 30 miles on 95.
It's
between New Jersey and Maryland. Right?
I spent some time in Delaware.
I've played at the University of Delaware. I got to play with Saves the Day when they were pushing a cassette tape. At the University of Delaware, they had some weird, like, cafe lunchroom that you could play. And I was in a band called The Low End Theory at the time, who played with them. And then they got, like, really successful and way bigger than us. And I was really jealous for a couple years. And then I was like, oh, you guys are cool. But yeah, I went through it.
I think that they still have shows in that same room.
Oh, really?
They got to play at that big cafeteria.
Cafeteria. It's still going?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I brought that up because, Jade, you just moved from Wilkes.
From Wilkes.
Something.
Bear.
Yeah.
I was calling it Wilkes Bear.
And
I was saying, like I was saying, I wasn't getting reprimanded for it, but the correct
way
is definitely Barre.
Wow.
Oaksbury.
How long were you living there that you got away with that?
A year.
That's remarkable to me. It's really remarkable. So how did you make your way out there?
I just had a couple friends who lived out there. I was going to move to like North Carolina or Florida, and then it just kind of fell through. So I just headed out over there. It was like super cheap.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Were you like intentionally trying to get out of the New York area?
Yeah, just to like change it up, switch it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And try to pay to be a touring musician.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
So now you're in Philly?
Yes. I just moved there like Friday.
Friday.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, still have like a bunch of
everybody's going
boxes
to Philly, right?
Stuff.
This is the place now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love Philly, but you know, it's I wouldn't have moved there.
Wait, what's the caveat?
I think it's great. I think it's great. I wouldn't have moved to Philly when I was, you know, in that mode, which is 20 years ago.
I would have, if you asked me last year, I wouldn't have moved to Philly.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, I'm not going to move to Philly.
It's Philly or Nashville, right?
How are you going to come to terms with,
that'd be wild.
With like Eagles fans?
The Eagles fans, that doesn't bother me as the 76ers fans.
Yeah.
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 Because, I mean, I don't want to say this, but they're the fakest fans.
Oh, yeah.
They're really the fakest fans, dude.
It's true. It's true.
Do you remember when they were like years ago
and
they were like 0-23 or 1-23 that year? They were, no one was there.
They didn't trust the process.
Dude, also, have you seen Warrior games lately?
They're out.
Despicable.
Luxury ticket. And you know what's cool?
Despicable.
Like, I'd say the narrative, what we're talking about of when a team gets bad and the stadium getting empty and their fans abandoning them probably happens in, like, most cities to
for
most
sure.
fans.
Yeah.
You happen to be a fan of the one team
that is, it's always
that is
just packed
die
out.
Hard as fuck,
yeah.
The New York Knicks,
for
regardless
sure.
of what's going on.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I feel like if Heat fans, for example,
mm-hmm.
like, when they played the Spurs and they all left, you know
yeah,
what I mean, before,
right.
like, that Ray Allen right. shot, they like owned it. They were like, yeah, we left.
Yeah.
Thought it was over.
Yeah.
Philly fans, they...
Miami,
I feel,
we're going to eat. Yeah.
The Sixer fans, I feel like they try to pretend that they were there.
Yeah.
For like those games. And it's like, dude.
And then they're just ride or die
yeah.
when it happens and turn into your standard Philly
yeah.
fan.
Yeah. yeah Eagles fans doesn't really bother me. I'm not too big into football so yeah. much, but... Yeah.
It's more of a cultural thing for me. I like barely watch football anymore.
Yeah.
But there's some sort of like... I think it's even like, you know how you can like carry scars from like past lives and stuff?
Yeah.
I think something weird might have happened with like an Eagles fan because it's beyond, I don't give a shit about the Eagles or the Giants like that much to be upset. There's something about, I see that like bird on a shirt and I like, I just like tense up a little bit. I just don't like feel great.
Start steaming from the ears.
Yeah, there's something might have happened. Back in the day.
There's some teams that elicit emotional response. It used to be the Oakland Raiders, you know, that like, because they've always had a tough guy. And now I think it's Philly. I think they've taken that.
Oh, yeah. They had the fan base. I mean, the Raiders are like, did they have anything crazier than those guys just looking like they were in Guar? You know, like, was it much?
Not in the last 10 years.
Yeah, like, Philly fans do some crazy shit. Like, they spit on my brother when he was a little kid. Seen some nasty stuff with that.
That was at a football game?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not cool. That's
yeah.
sad.
It was bad. But then, now I realize as an adult, looking back in retrospect, that, like, I went to a game last season, and I'm, like, looking around, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is, like, a fucking step above NASCAR, and, like, a small step as far as, like, the cultural kind of just, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a small step.
Yeah, like, so I'm looking around and I'm like, oh, no shit, I saw all that dumb fucking trashy bullshit when I was a kid. Like, this makes perfect sense. I'm like looking around me, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. I didn't get it as a kid. I actually somehow managed to be like, oh, these guys are cool, you know? It probably turned me into like half a trash bag, like even
yeah.
going to those games and watching those dudes.
It's like Yankees fans. I'm a Yankees fan, unfortunately, but they're
too.
Like, they're the shittiest.
Oh, we're the worst.
They're so bad.
It's pretty bad. Even though, I mean, it's no one could be the bigger heels than the Astros right now, at least.
Right, yeah.
At least.
Would they get caught cheating?
Yeah,
like
that?
A
number
stealing
of times.
Signs.
All sorts of crazy stuff, like stealing signals with cameras and relaying it to batters, using like noise, like someone would hit a wall with a bat, like before a pitch came to tell the batter what kind of pitch it was.
Oh,
and like
really?
These weird tells and like, and this was like an old school kind of thing in baseball that people accepted the fact that there was sign stealing. It was like kind of a cool part of it. Like the guy at second base sees what the catcher throws and tells the hitter. But now that like computers, Skynet's gotten involved, people are up in arms.
Isn't there something too? Don't they like the chest protectors or something? They can like send to the pitcher, like so they don't have to do signs anymore. They're talking about
what? Like that's an earpiece or something?
Like yeah, like they could press, like they'll have like
vibrates or something
buttons in their chest protector. And the pitcher, I guess, has something like in his ear.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the catcher could just press it now. Oh. And it goes into like he wears like an ear AirPod or something. That's what they're talking about to stop the sign stealing.
That's crazy talk.
Crazy.
That can work?
Yeah.
Why don't we just, I mean, it's getting to the point, like, you know, it's getting to that point in baseball and especially with like instant replay, right? Like, like we know more at home in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Then, you know, anybody on the field right. knows about what actually just happened. And it's leading to this kind of like technological, analytical, like look into sports. It might just be a matter of time before it's like, I developed this robot to like play your robot in sports.
Oh, yeah. You know? That's going like, to happen. But also,
wasn't there a Hugh Jackman movie about that?
I think that something steal.
Yeah.
They're going to have to let the tech take over. Like, because where do you draw the line with tech? Like, things like instant replay. Like, they just need to make everything kind of reviewable
at this point. Yeah. I mean, I listen to people argue all the time about the, you know, there's it's just a matter of time before there's, like, robotic umpires in baseball calling balls and strikes.
But also, you're going to have sensors in the balls so that, you know, like, you're not going to have to call, like, out of bounds or touchdown. Yeah. Like,
well, that's the next step is tennis style.
Right.
Where it's like you just see it on the video within 10 seconds, the technology going
in and out.
Is
that how they have that when they replay it in tennis? Is it something in the ball?
It is. That's or something insane. On a court of the ball, yeah.
I never knew that.
So that's probably the tech that's going to
come into
I figured
it was
baseball.
The color of the ball. It was keyed in or something.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like green screen type
yeah,
thing?
Yeah. Like it was to track it.
Well, you know more about
but
stuff
maybe,
like that.
But maybe it's in the ball.
You're a really smart guy, though.
You I haven't. I don't follow like tennis, dude. I don't know.
You're wiring. You know, Brad is currently currently building the Macy's window,
Saks Fifth Avenue
Christmas.
I
work
for Santa.
How cool is that?
That will. What does that mean?
It's
building
robots.
The window, like
I'm actually just installing it, but I help build those things.
Hell yeah!
It's like the seasonal
things that
gig.
Move.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's sick. I didn't know if you were talking about. It would still be sick if you were just talking about making the glass for the window.
Oh yeah.
I thought he was like he's making huge piece of glass.
I work for I have a seasonal gig. I do that. I work for the company that does that stuff.
How excited are for you to like just flex in front of your kids? Like bring your kids there and flex.
I just was
awesome.
Last week I was in Toronto putting in these 5 windows that were awesome. I think they're better than the Saks
windows. Joy to children, Brad.
And my kids have to look at that on video. So I get to take them to Saks.
I'm really happy for
you. That's where I'm going, baby.
I might take my kids. Tell them that
take him to Saks.
Your new Uncle Brad built it. Is that inappropriate?
No, it's fine.
So what part of like Philly did you move to?
East Germantown.
Did you know a lot of people there? Like you moving in with crew?
No
or just
idea.
Going,
no, I went cold, with my man. Girlfriend. We went to like, we saw like 4 or 5 different places. And then.
Different neighborhoods?
Like,
or did you say,
like
did
probably
you think?
2 or 3 different neighborhoods, I would say. Like, yeah, the like one, it was like one dude kind of showing us, like he had different complexes. So he was just kind of showing us all around. And, like the first place that we were in, we were like, this place is cool. And none of the other places topped it. So we were just like, all right.
But did you like here? Try to vet the neighborhood at all? Like figure out, you just went in dry.
Yeah, just out like, so.
It's New York style, Brad.
That's hot. But you're from New York.
From New York, you go anywhere in the world and just
I admire
figure it out.
That.
Just sort it out. You know, that's how it works.
Yeah. I mean, the only big jump I ever made like that was when I moved to LA, but I had like 3 friends that lived in the neighborhood that I stayed in.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I'm 39 years in New Jersey with about 2-3 years of homelessness mixed in there. So I couldn't even, I can't even tell you.
Can't comment. Maybe someday you'll just pack up the family and move to
Hudson Valley, baby. Let's go. Let's go breathe some air. Sick of this.
I know you're
sick of these rat infested buildings. Getting tired. We have dead rats all over my practice space now. We named them Warren D. Martini.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Dude, I've seen his practice space. It looks like there would be dead rats.
It's
so
rats.
Now to know that there actually are, is not.
Yeah.
I mean, would you rather have dead rats or live rats?
Good point. Dead rats are really smell.
I like live. I'd prefer live. Yeah, I would, because the dead ones, they start to stink.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
Funny ancillary story about this. I have like a really shady deal with like the landlord who owns this space. Essentially, it's like an old, probably Italian old school realty company in Jersey City that handles the property. I pay a third party company my rent. I don't even know.
Like online or?
No, I go to the office, but I okay.
pay cash.
But no, I write a check, but I don't write a check to the place I'm going.
Right.
And then, you know, but it's this kind of loose deal where it's like, it's only a matter of time before this building becomes something else.
Mm-hmm.
If you push them too hard, they're just going to stop having musicians there.
Right.
Because they don't care that much.
Yeah.
So recently, him solving the rat problem was bringing two electric rat traps down. I happened to see the guy when he came down bringing them. He's like, oh, good. Glad I saw you. You know, this is how they work. You turn on the light, set him here. I'm like, what's he thinking's going to happen here? I'm like, all right, cool. And then like a couple days later, I walk into space, some blinking lights, meaning dead rats inside of this thing. I text the guy. I'm like, hey, man, it looks like traps filled up, you know, just telling you the person I pay for this space that the rats are dead. They're in there. And he's like, yeah, I'll send someone over. 2, 3 days, 4 days pass. Oh. No one. Starting to smell. We see a tail popping out of one of them. That's the one we named Warren D. Martini. And the other guy who splits the space texts him again, being like, hey, man, you know, think we'd do something about this. This is his response. He goes, hey, of all the grown men who use this space, no one could empty a rat back out and then set it back for us. As he said, he literally challenged our manhood.
Oh, my God.
That's the way to do it.
He challenged our manhood, you know?
So did you go back and empty out the rats?
No, dude. I'm a savvy ass. I've been renting since I was 17. Like, I'm not falling for that shit. Like, I'm not renting. Like, I'll fucking put it. I'll put the whole trap rat in tow, like, on their fucking realty steps before I dump that thing. But, but you know. So I hope you don't run into this problem in your new adventures.
Hopefully not. No, mice I'm all right with. I don't even
mind. Yeah, they're kind of cool.
Yeah, see mice.
I kind of think of like romantic little things. Like I feel like sometimes I find mice shit in my house. But I like to think that they were like down there wearing like nice clothes and like eating cheese with mini silverware and stuff.
Going through your cabinets trying to prepare a meal,
like,
and stuff.
Yeah, like
that.
Just being like fun, not being like dubious. That's kind of the way I view mice. Rats are, they're a different story.
Yeah.
They're a little more, rats are going to take over the world at some point. Like they're,
and they deserve it.
They are. I just read an article actually. I forget which country it was. Somewhere, I believe in Southeast Asia. That had a, they had poisonous frogs,
mm-hmm.
who had like taken over. They were like, you know, not indigenous to this area and had come and were killing native populations, like really messing up the area. And then these researchers were finding like frogs, like surgically like cut apart in riverbanks in the morning. Like, and they did real research and found that the river rats now learned to basically make a cut in these frogs, pull out their gallbladders, which is where the poison lies, and eat around it.
No way.
This is real.
That's
look it
incredible.
Up. Rats are coming.
All right.
Be prepared. Be prepared.
Ideally, if it could be any other animal to take over the world,
yeah.
What would you rather have take over the world?
It's a quick answer. I've thought about this. Sea turtles.
I like it.
They don't have fingers.
It doesn't matter. It's not about that. It's about wisdom. And I can't think of a wiser, like, animal than a sea turtle who's just been, like, slow rolling through the ocean for, like, 150 years, has seen so much shit. Things have come and gone. I think a sea turtle really understands the purpose of life.
The ebb and flow.
I do. What do you think?
Did you say raccoons?
I didn't say anything.
I thought somebody said raccoons. It just popped in my head.
I said fingers.
I want to see raccoons.
You think raccoons?
Yeah, I would love to see raccoons take over the world.
They would. They're clever.
They're clever.
They are clever.
They could do it. They could definitely do it.
But again, I'm back to this mice scenario where I don't know why I'm just envisioning them in like the raccoons, not as suits as much, but like flat caps. You know what I mean? Like kind of like more like
the Peaky Blinders. Yeah,
they work like somewhere kind of dingy, steam pipes. That's kind of their deal. Yeah, maybe it's like the black of their eyes, like soot.
Yeah.
When you're like, do you write a lot at home? Like when you were looking for places, do you look for like somewhere with like a side room or like somewhere where you can like set up for stuff like that?
No. I wish I put that much thought into anything. I just like what happened was that we just did like a tour and we came home, and like since August or September I was planning to move like around this time.
And where were you then?
In Wilkes-Barre. Okay. Yeah. And then like so we were leaving for another tour in December, and like we got that tour when we were on tour in September. So I was like, oh shit, I have to make this happen in like a couple weeks.
Okay.
So it was just kind of like fast track.
More matter everything. Of necessity.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like for, I mean, in Wilkes-Barre, I just wrote in my bedroom a lot. And then I grew up in Long Beach. And right. I used to, that was like more, I lived with my parents. Mm-hmm. So I would just like try and go out and find places to write, whether it be like at like a practice space or like by the boardwalk, stuff like that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you like, you find you can focus a little better, like out of the house sometimes?
Yeah, I just get so like, it's like, I can't really write around people or like, like play guitar, like not really confident.
Right.
Playing guitar, or, like writing something that isn't like, I don't know what I'm playing yet in front of people, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah. What's your, do you start with, how do you start with a song? You start with guitar, you start with melody?
Like? Different. It's different stuff every time. Sometimes, like, the last album, a lot of the songs came in, like, the choruses kind of, like, came in my head. Like, a phrase here, like, the melody for the chorus. And then I would take that to guitar. And then I'll just, like, play around with guitar for, like, a couple hours and have, like, riffs, kind of. Mm-hmm. I'd say, like, maybe like say if I have like three or four riffs and then like just put them in my phone and then go from like having that chorus and then try and see what like riff is in that key and like kind of build it around like that. But really every song it kind of, or every album at least, has definitely been way different in terms of like writing the songs and like how they came together.
What was like for Bastion of Glow, what was like your demo process like? Like how do you go from like step one to completing it and then like sending it to whoever's gonna play and stuff? How's that work?
So for that album, Aaron who plays drums in Oso, he just like left this kick drum at my house. I don't even know how it ended up there. It's crazy.
I've had kick drums,
you know?
Yeah, someone calls me like, do you know you have this kick? I'm like, that's where the fuck that kid is? Yeah, this has happened to me, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it was just in his car and he needed room or whatever. He just, like, left it there. Yeah. So
it's when every drummer starts living out of a storage space once in their life. They're having loose parts through friends' houses. Yeah.
And I just had, like, this, I took a paper towel and I, like, pretty much just like use the paper towel as like the kick, like like kick drum, like this, the skins like this.
Yeah, so you're going like marching just, like, band style.
Like kind of like that, like and clapped on the wood for like the drums. So it was like the drums were like super simple, and then just did acoustic and like clean lead and stuff like that. But like for the last album, I think I only got done with like four demos all the way through. And then, cause like most of the guitar leads I wrote while we were like recording.
Gotcha.
Yeah, as I've gotten older, I feel like I've like have written way less consistently. Like I used to just be writing all the time. And then like with this album, it was kind of like snuck up on me. It was like, it's time to record. And I had like about like maybe 12 not finished songs.
Wow.
Like, all right, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Me and Aaron, who plays drums on the record, like, we went into a practice space, like, literally the night before tracking drums. But we had 3 days to track drums.
Cool.
So it was kind of like, you know, we had, like, room to work with there. And we just, like, finished, like, just went over it, made sure we had all the skeletons and stuff like that.
Why did you wind up with, like, those time constraints? Was it, like, a label studio thing or, like...
I think it was being big time. Well,
I know him.
Like, Mike, who we were recording with, I think
they're
he had
guys.
Like
they're
some kind of like project coming up, so he could only do it in that given time frame.
Okay,
and I think they like wanted to get the record out before summer, so it was either do it then or like not be able to do that. So,
right?
Yeah,
I heard you say in a different interview. I think that that you almost like had to take the turn for this record to be a little less personal and a little more abstract, but kind of not intentionally, just because you didn't have as much time to like look into it. Is that the
maybe,
way I heard that?
I feel like it was maybe the opposite.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Like a little bit less abstract. Cause like, I like all the other stuff I've written is
kind of
been like inspired by something
like
the record before, the last one, Unihon mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was, I read this book, Thumbsucker.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, this is fucking amazing.
Right.
And like, it kind of like, I was like, I want to write an album that's like this book. And like, kind of like that was like spawned a huge, just like inspiration streak or whatever
cool.
for me.
Is that something like if someone went back who knows that record and read that book, could you like piece some of the like kind of themes or stories
yeah,
together?
There's a couple lines.
Who wrote that book, Thumbsucker?
I think it's Walter Kern.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
Cool.
There's a movie, but the movie
doesn't even
couldn't fit it in like 90 minutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not a bad movie though, pretty entertaining. Sure. But yeah, so this record, I think it just, I didn't really have time to like get inspired by something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it just ended up being more personal because of that.
Sure. Like just a little more heart in your sleeve. You didn't have a chance to like fuck with it as much.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
I think the abstract thing might've come from, cause Mike, who recorded it would send me like, just like weird shit, like YouTube videos that were like 2 minutes long or like movie trailers and stuff like that.
It just sounds that, like soundscape
like,
type stuff.
Yeah. Or? Just like different or even like, just like a straight up movie trailer and like, kind of let that like try and like inspire me in some way and stuff like that. So that's where I feel like the inspiration was a bit more abstract, but it's definitely way more personal than the other stuff
that's cool.
that I've done before. For sure.
How do you feel like exposing, you know, it's something I think a lot of the newer artists are so like, so raw in the way that they kind of really expose your emotions and the way you're feeling about something in a very
mm-hmm.
like real way. I would add you as, you know, part of that. And like, I always wonder, you know, as a drummer, I never had to suffer the effects of like the court of public opinion as much as someone who's connected to the words, you know, like it's kind of a different story.
For sure.
Like, have you felt any like personal reaction to that? Like where you've had to add a defense or open yourself up more or like something?
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
For sure. I feel like, yeah, even, like, it's weird. Like, the more people listen to the band, it's just way more anxiety-inducing.
Right.
But it's, like, I'm not, like, complaining about it, because obviously, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's, like, you want more people to listen to it and stuff like that. But I definitely feel, like, I'm still trying to figure out defense mechanisms and stuff like that all the time to kind of, like, keep me from, like, getting too involved in like reading stuff and
yeah.
you know what I mean, stuff sure. like that.
Because when you start
sure,
putting
though.
That emotion out there, like someone, it's not like, oh, we don't like your music. It's like maybe we don't like you,
right? Yeah,
which is strange, right?
Yeah,
and then some people react to it in a way where you're like, oh my god, I don't want to tell anyone anything anymore.
Right.
Some people react in a way like, yo, fuck you, I don't even know you, man. Like, what the fuck you saying about me? You know?
Like, yeah, like I tried to do that shit in my, like, were in my quarters. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Get it out
try
there.
Try not to get, yeah.
I feel don't like read if I, it. Just don't read it.
Yeah.
I believe in like a Wu-Tang reaction every once in a while. It can kind of like drive you too.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. It can if you allow
but
it
the people
to
that,
not overcome you.
They have no stake in the game, these folks that are commenting on your
art. Well, their stake in the game is to piss you off.
Yeah.
That's actually good for them. That means more people read the review and you know, grab a link or
right,
whatever happens
so.
Now. Yeah. They're trying to like, that's like, was like the whole fucking Pitchfork model.
Yeah.
Right? It's like literally like let's arbitrarily just destroy this band.
Yeah.
So more people will click on it and enjoy this article. That was literally their fucking clickbait model, you know?
And with that, it's like so polarizing where it's going to go, it's either going to go, they're going to tear you up. You know what I mean? You're going to be like, oh, fuck. Or they're going to be like, this is cool. This is good.
Uh-huh.
And then everyone's going to be like, y'all are stupid for thinking that's good.
Yeah,
and then
you're
like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a no-win situation. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say it doesn't bother me, but I just feel like I'm figuring out, like, different defenses to it all the time and stuff like that. And there's
what's
definitely
something you've, like, noticed you started doing or using?
I used to be way more active in, like, social media and stuff like that. I used to all the time just, like, tweet whatever I was thinking.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, too, I'm like, is that just because of, like, I used to work a lot of jobs where I just worked by myself, whether it be, like, delivering food or, like, I worked at this dairy barn. So stuff like that. So I feel like having, like, 40 hours a week where you're by yourself, bored, like doing whatever job, like you're just like, I'm just gonna tweet this out, like,
right,
or like
right.
tweet this joke out or stuff like that.
And just I was looking like, for just some like social activity, like
right,
anything,
yeah, just tweet whatever or like post whatever. Mm-hmm. And like now I feel like I don't do that at all because I'm just like, oh man, I don't want people to think I'm fucking stupid or like, you know what I mean?
I mean, there's some truth to that. I mean, more and more people pay attention, like, it's like, you know, that's why, you know, people in the public eye keep getting caught for shit they wrote in like 2012 on Twitter when they imagined nobody was ever going to look at their fucking Twitter, you know?
For sure.
That happened to me. I accidentally made fun of the Killers once. And then like million years later got like asked to open for the Killers. And like, and like that came back to me. Like those guys were like, you said something about us once. I'm like, yo, that was like before like the realm of like, I'm like, you were like the Beach Boys to me.
Remember.
I'm like, how did that? I'm like, no. I'm like, there's no way.
What'd you say about the Killers?
I used the word corn dicks, which was strange because like, it's not even like one of my lines, you know? It was the weirdest thing. It came back to me. And then when it came back to me, you know, I told the guys, I'm like, yo, I'm so willing to get ahead of this and just eat crow. Cause like, you know, I'm like, I'll write an email. I'll be like, yeah, that was stupid. My fault. No problem. It was me. Like, I'll take it however. And it turns out no one really cared because it was the drummer who said it anyway. The upside, these are the things I don't have to deal with. You know what I mean? That you, I still get that like kind of liberty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can be like Xavier McDaniel. You got to be like the thing, you know?
Yeah.
But people connect, you know, there is like a blessing and a curse to that. I've seen it a lot. I mean, it's like you're going to be the main focus of the vitriol, of the love, of like all of it.
I can't even stop thinking about, like, it's like one thing if you're like, this band seems like a bunch of assholes, and then you gotta be like, hey dude, did you call me an asshole? Yeah. But if you're like, hey, did you call me a corn dick?
What does that even mean? It's just confusing, it's like, more than anything. I know it's one of those things. I'm like, I've talked like a lot of shit in my life, so it's like one of those things I hear come back. I'm like, no, I didn't say it. Did I fucking say that? Like, at some point, was I hot about some like weird video or like something that just made me mad? Yeah, it's tricky.
It's funny how that works too with like Twitter and stuff like that, because it can just be a passing thought
you
for a second. You know what I mean?
It's scary.
Like, yeah.
I mean, really, like anyone who doesn't want, like, you should just be off that stuff. It's like a strange tie, right? But
for sure.
But it's bizarre, like the amount of social capital, like you actually need that.
For sure.
You need to promote your
and
shit.
And it's like, dude, I would be lying to say, like, also, it's like, it's nice to go on there and read some of the things that people will say to you.
Mm.
I think when you start looking for what people are saying, like, about you,
right,
that's
right.
not to you or whatever, then you get in trouble and you're like, oh man, what? You know what I mean? Like, you start doubting yourself or whatever. But you're like, the stuff that people write to you, you're like, okay, it's nice little pick me up, a little bit of validation.
Sure.
You
know, and that's the beauty of it, right? Is like you can actually manage to have direct engagement with people who are into, you know, you don't have to write like a fan letter. You can actually hit up someone and decide to be accessible to your fans, which is huge. And people love that. I wanted to ask, you know, I don't know if you heard about this Taylor Swift debacle going on.
No.
Where essentially, like, the short of it is that the label that she recorded and released, like, her first six albums called, like, Big Machine Records was, like, swallowed up by a hedge fund. You know what I mean? And, like, basically now own Taylor Swift's masters, which she can't do anything about. And she publicly went on the offensive against, like, all these people. And I don't know what the Taylor Swift army is called. I'm sure they have a name online. I don't know
Swift
what it is.
Nation.
Yeah, Swift Nation or something. Swiftly came about and, you know, started, like, you know, and now this management office, the label, like, had to, like, shut down because they were getting, like, threats from Taylor Swift fans and stuff.
What?
So it's like this
So she kind of jumped out and said, explained what was happening?
She explained what was happening and basically, you know, that this company was never gave her a chance to buy her masters back, which legally they don't have to. But I guess her, you know, her defense to that was she had such a close relationship with the people that they should have. And I think that's what she was like, seems like she was offended about, even though there might not be legal recourse.
Gotcha.
So she took to social media, which, like, you know, the people in the position, like the label and stuff were like, you know, we could have dealt with this behind closed doors and like adult meetings and like. And I found it like kind of similar to like what's going on in sports with like player empowerment, where like the interesting thing about social media is like who has the power now that these people can speak.
Right.
You know, like Taylor Swift decides to make a statement on it and like 10 million people react to it and this and that. Even though they own the masters, it's kind of giving like transparency to like a dark side of the industry that maybe people didn't know about. And just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. And it's the same way like LeBron uses it. You know, like every team knows damn well now that LeBron is worth $500 million to any team he steps onto the court with every single year. And he uses that to his advantage now by social media and by empowering other players and doing this stuff. So that's what's going on with Taylor Swift. But the interesting thing about it was, you know, someone who comes out of our world understand something about like owning your own material and like putting yourself out. And you self-released your second album.
I did.
Right. And like, and I was wondering, you know, now that
who put out the first record?
So the first record was a friend, Mike Carino, put it out. That was like kind of just like a handshake deal type thing. Like we wrote it out in email and stuff like that. Then the second record we put out. We put it out ourselves, had friends press the vinyl and stuff like that. But we actually ended up giving that to Triple Crown.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah.
But at the time, though, like, you know, I know you basically just were like, I have the record, I recorded it, and I don't want to wait anymore, right? And I just want to get this out there because I believe in it and think it'll do something.
For sure.
Like, you know, I wish more people did that. Especially on a smaller level, because like, what's the point of giving up your masters at like such a young age? It's crazy.
For sure. I think even at that time, though, I don't think I even thought about, like, I wasn't even as well versed in knowing stuff like that.
It's more
as
I did. Of necessity.
It was, for at that time, it was kind of like, I have this album. I think that this is like the best. Like, I was super excited. And I was just like, I think this is like leagues beyond like anything I've ever done before, and nobody really wants to put this out. So if a small label does put it out and then we wait like months for vinyl or whatever, it's gonna get lost in the mix. And I was just kind of like, at the time it was like, it was January, and I was like, well, we could kind of try and get in before all these, because I feel like a lot of labels put out stuff in like February or
they're
spring
all fucking, they take
they're
the,
going for like their album of
the industry
year
vacation
shit, you know what I mean? So I was just like, I feel like this is like the best time to just try and get it out there and just like put it out for free, and like hopefully that'll do well. I mean, even at that time I was like kind of, I was just like, man, I'm going to just like put out a shit ton of music. And I thought it was going to be like way less of a touring thing.
Right.
And yeah, now it feels like the opposite now. Right. I feel like I'm touring a bunch and not putting out as much.
Yeah. Like, you have to work the record.
Yeah. You just got back from Europe?
Yeah.
Is that your first time?
First time with Oso.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I filled in for a friend's band like 2 years ago, and then went to went to Greece and like nice. Budapest.
That's
like,
cool.
This past year.
So yeah. Where did you go on this last tour?
This last tour is like mainland Europe and then the UK. Like about a week in the UK.
How'd it go?
It was Europe was like, Europe was sick. It was about like, the shows were super small, like maybe like 30 people, stuff like that. Touring Europe is like weird. I feel like I would just rather just be there, like checking stuff out. You know what I mean? Because like sitting, I don't know, getting dark early and like sitting in a car all day, and just like a bit of a bummer. But the UK shows were like some of my favorite shows that we've ever played in my entire life. Like,
nice.
Yeah, it was well worth it. Like,
were you doing them with local people?
So we went out with this band, Prince Daddy and the Hyena, who like we did our first US tour.
Nice.
And so we were just like, oh, let's try and do Europe together too.
That's
like,
cool.
You know, so that was pretty sweet.
It's always nice when you just like go out with people you already know too.
Yeah, I think it really made the tour like made everything like really cool.
Yeah. When you were in mainland Europe, did you get a lot of like mystery stew and stuff at the venues?
I think there was one thing in Switzerland that I ate that I didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
That's about it.
No Euro. Yeah. I wonder, the days of Euro mystery, you must have had a lot of Euro mystery stew.
I never toured Europe.
You didn't?
Never. Oh. I unfortunately.
It's just when you're in like Italy and like some giant bucket comes out, 20 people with one single dread on the back of their head, just fucking up these bowls with something hot. It's got some spice, some veggies in there. I don't know. It's good. These are always really good bread you dip into it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the.
They do bread over there.
Europe just ruined bread, cheese, and coffee for me. It's never the same. I like the self-releasing thing. I want to get back to real fast, just because in your experience with that, is there anything like a do or don't involved in that process that you could maybe like tell a younger band or something, or any band really, like at this point?
Mostly do. Just straight up do. I feel like it's the right thing to do for so many bands, because a lot of times I feel like, For smaller labels, they're not really, it's like, why are you giving people ownership to put something on Spotify?
Yeah.
When you can, you know what I mean? You could just do that. You could just do it with like DistroKid or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yep. So what's on like DistroKid? Like, explain that to like people who don't.
So DistroKid is just like, you sign up for it and it's about like, they'll give you like a flat rate for a year, and then they just give you your Spotify royalties and stuff like that.
Right.
But I also understand the fact of like why record labels exist and like what they have to offer. You know what I mean? And it's like, if there's certain things that I know, like I'll never ever be able to just be like, oh, I have 10 grand. Like, I'm going to just drop this on a record. You know what I mean? Or never ever imagined myself being in a position like that to do that. So like, but I also really wanted, like, this last record was the first time that I ever recorded like in an actual like studio. And I was just like, I want to be able to do that. And I want to give myself like the opportunity to do that, was way more like of a priority than it was like, how much will I make off this, or how much, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And, I'm kind of like, with music for me, like, it's mostly just kind of been like, all right, let's just like do the ride, like take, you know what I mean? Like, do it till like the wheels fall off and just see where it takes me. And like, if I look back and go, oh shit, like I could have made money off that, like one day, like maybe I'll do that. But it's like, I don't know. It's, you have to really decide what's important to you, because like to keep a DIY or like a more DIY-centered career, mm-hmm. I think could be, like, more sustainable, and you could actually see yourself, like, making, like, a decent living and being able to pay your rent and stuff like that. But for me, in terms of music, it's, like, never really been my, like, number one priority. Like, I've always kind of just wanted to just see, like, how crazy can this get? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who, like, could we play with this band, or can I, like, record with this person, or can I, like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that to me is just, like, is, like, super exciting and, like, enticing. And, like, yeah, I mean, maybe one day I'll look back and be like, oh, shit, maybe I should have did this differently or did this differently and, like, cashed out. But I've always, like, I've always kind of had the mindset of, like, all right, well, one day I'm not going to be doing this, and I have to kind of figure out something else to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I could definitely understand what you're saying, and I think it's a good way to look at it, because if you can manage to pull a little bit of that pressure off that you're living and dying with every note or every show or something like that, you'll probably manage to enjoy the ride a little better.
Yeah.
You know, which is, in the end, more important than finding maybe a little bit more success or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think that those people who are just, like, so honed into, like, every detail and who are, like, business crazy and social media crazy and doing this stuff, like, they probably are helping themselves.
For sure.
But they might be driving themselves fucking nuts at the same time. So, you know, and it's like, trade-off.
I mean, it's really, it's like, everybody's different. It's goes with what's important to you. You know what I mean? Some people are like, I love playing music. I want to do that and make sure I never have to work another job ever again in my life. And, like, this is the best way I could do this. You know what I mean? And that's just, it's never been like that for me, where I've just wanted to, like, play music. Like, I'll be playing music no matter what.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So if I can do it as, like, a career, that's fucking so sick. You know what I mean? And if I can't, then I want to try and do some crazy shit, you know? Cool.
Like, but that's the attitude. That's the attitude. You will do music, because people that go into it thinking, like, this seems like a good way to make money, and they're not successful. Like,
yeah,
that's the core fucking value you have to have is,
for sure,
I'm going to do this no matter what, and then you will, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it ties into, like, I heard a quote. I don't know if it was a song lyric or just a quote by you, but, like, you said something about being radically committed to letting the light in, which I thought was really cool and kind of ties into this. Like, what do you do in a daily practice, like, in your day? Like, you wake up, you know, I think about this, I have, like, sort of a morbid way of doing it. Sometimes I think of, like, a bunch of awful shit, you know what I mean? I'll think of, like, people who died young, like, people who something fucked up happened to, and then it drives me in a way where I'm like, well, at least I'm still here and healthy, and I should, like, feel good about it.
Right.
But that comes from, like, sometimes I'm looking for maybe, like, a brighter place to draw the inspiration from. You know what I mean? Like, so how do, like, when you wake up, like, how do you like convince yourself of something like that? Like, being committed to letting
that
only positive things around. Like,
So I mean, this is like a conversation that I had one time. Was about, it's like, I think my girlfriend was, like, referencing somebody who, like, I have no idea who it is, like, right now. So, like, but if somebody listening to this knows who it is, like, a philosopher or something like that. Huh. And basically the idea is that, like, every moment that you exist in is perfect. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the things like that morbidness or that insecurity or that doubt or just stuff like that is what takes away from that perfection. You know what I mean? So for me, how I try to view it is, like, every moment is already perfect, right? What can I do to contribute to this and not take away from it?
I see.
You know what I mean? Like, because that, like, for, like, anxiety, stuff like that, that shit just takes away from what's already there, what's already perfect. You know what I mean? So,
and you can manage to do that even in, like, an imperfect scenario, like a scenario involving, like, trauma or something, like, weird going on.
For sure. Yeah. Huh. Well, in the sense that every moment is perfect, is that everything is perfect. Like, it is what it's supposed to be.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So,
do you believe in like a predetermination with stuff like that, or it's just all unfolding in a?
Yeah, I don't know if people who subscribe to like that philosopher, if that's part of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't believe in like predetermination or anything like that.
Were you raised with any faith?
Yeah, just like Irish Catholic.
Okay.
So like,
you got some guilt.
Yeah. I went to Catholic school, like my whole childhood. Yeah, stuff like that.
And your mom was a teacher in a Catholic school too?
She was a teacher's assistant.
Okay.
Yeah, so she was like, she would like help out with like the art class and stuff like that. She still does that. She works with like a kindergarten.
Cool.
But she's not really like, I think it was just a thing of like, they just wanted us to go to that school and like,
gotcha,
morals and stuff like that. They're not really like religious. Like, I don't know if they really subscribe to like the faith or anything. Like, mm-hmm, that. I don't know. She shouldn't say that. She still works there, but yeah, you know,
I don't know. I don't think we're getting many streams from like the Covenant audience at this point. What, you see the numbers, Brad? I don't.
You don't break it down by
nuns
faith.
Between 50 and 70. What's our demo on that?
Nuns on their Jesus pod. I mean,
like,
one
Horowitz.
Thing.
Ew.
As someone who's not a big fan of, you know, organized religion, you have to say that you can get a good education from the Catholic Church.
Sure.
They don't deny science like some other people.
I'll fuck with a Jesuit, maybe. They're kind of cool. They're better.
That is a good way
I'll
to get it.
Fuck with the Jesuit.
But it's funny, though. Like, and I don't know if you found this the same. I feel like the people I know who went through the Catholic school system often seem to be not the ones who are like the most opposed to it, but the ones most sure that it isn't true.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is interesting. Like not
get in on the inside.
Yeah, yeah. Like they don't always walk away like hating it, but they seem to have like a more well-versed version of faith than someone who is raised like blindly atheistic or something does. Like, because it still opens up that window to that there's just something more than what we're dealing with here. And if you can convince yourself of that, then you can determine your own faith, you know? Like, my father just told me too early that, like, people die and rot and nothing happens. and I almost wish, like, you know, like somebody at some point was like, no, like, there's like, a stairway somewhere else if you choose to go
Benny,
there.
I'm going to tell you this truth on your third birthday today.
Brutal. This is called pulling the Band-Aid,
someday
kid.
You will
I'm from the Bronx.
Rot.
And you're from Central Jersey. I need to harden you up. That was what was going on. It was brutal. It was brutal.
That is a little brutal.
But I heard, so there's some funny, like, I heard you talk about how you're from Long Beach in Long Island, right?
Mm-hmm. Surf?
Mm-mm. No.
But I heard you say that it's kind of like culturally detached from the rest of Long Island a little bit? Like, how'd you mean by that?
Growing up, like, that was like, it was like, we're not Long Island, we're Long Beach. Like, it was different. I don't know. Kids from Long Beach, like, we wouldn't really, like, I feel like kids on Long Island would go hang out with each other. And I kind of, like, got into that once I was, like, 18 or 17 and, like, started, like, driving and, like, going to shows and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But Long Beach kids were just like all like had bikes and we would just kind of hang out in Long Beach and that was like pretty much it really.
Does it have like a kind of like beach community vibe or?
A little bit. Yeah.
You seem to have like a nice slow roll about you. Was
yeah.
Was it the sea? Was it the sea? That?
I think that was a bunch of weed. Just 10 years of chronic weed smoking. But it's like a small city, I would say. It's like a small city and it looks like kind of like it's trying to like impersonate California a little bit.
Pretty cool.
You know? But yeah, so it's not so much like a beach community vibe as it is, it's like a bar town.
Oh,
that's how I would describe it. It's like you have like residential area, and then when you get into like the commerce of stuff, it's like just mostly bars,
right.
So bars and restaurants, stuff like that.
You got that cold cheese slice?
No,
that's Long Island.
No,
right?
That's all the way. Yeah, I think that's like,
you know about
Summit?
This?
No, I don't know.
They take a hot slice of pizza, nice hot slice of pizza, and then just dump a pile of cold cheese on top and let it like melt down as you eat it. Pretty fucking good, actually. Yeah. You're not into it?
Not into it.
Over cheese?
Oh, yeah, I'm
over cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, but the place that does it, is it Little, there's like place Little Vincent's or something like that?
Yeah, it's that place next to the Paramount.
By the Paramount? Yeah, place is great, though.
It's
the pizza,
serious.
The pizza's really good, for sure.
I had a sound guy from Long Island who just wouldn't shut the fuck up about it for like a month. Oh my God. You gotta fucking try this. You gotta fucking
cold
try
cheese.
This, Benny. Yeah, Jersey Benny. Come on, you gotta fucking try this. Now this guy moved to Jersey. He's the best. I'd kill him for it. You were a camp counselor.
Yes.
So was I.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What was the vibe?
It was sick.
Where was the camp?
It was in Long Beach.
Oh.
Yeah.
What age kids?
My group was 5 to 7.
Oh, it's so fun, isn't it?
Perfect age.
It's perfect age.
Yeah.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah. And then, because once they get to like 10, 12, like they all just want to fight. They just want to do fight club every day.
Right. Was that
yeah, dude, and that's like the worst group to have, because then kids are going home with like black eyes, and the parents come in and they're like, "Are you letting my kid like get beat up?"
What kind of camp was this, man? Fight club.
Seriously. Dude, it was like a thing, man. Oh.
We have children. Both of us are like, Jesus. Yeah, we're not finding out what this camp is. I'm not going there.
But yeah, it was cool. What age did you?
About the same.
Okay.
Yeah, about the same. Yeah. Like 5 to 8. Like,
cool.
So much fun.
Ours wasn't like a sleepaway camp or anything.
No,
like,
mine either. Mine was actually kind of like a rich kid one. It was on the campus of like a private high school.
Okay.
And it cost like a pretty good amount of dough to like send your kids there. But I had a friend who like, it was actually like a Jew, like it was 50% Jewish too, at least. Then my friend Mike Greenstein got me the job there. You piece that together. And but like, so a lot of the kids who worked there were like I've always been a little out of the box of your like standard Jewish kid, you know?
Right.
So I was like an anomaly there. They're like, oh my God. Like, you have long hair and tattoos, and you're like in a, and most of them were like, I'm a freshman at Marist. And like, you know. So I definitely like, I felt super cool at that place, like, like pretty subversive, you know? I was like the real alternative guy. I started dating the lifeguard.
Dude, you
who wound
made.
Up being my first love.
This sounds
my
like a summer movie.
Yeah.
It sounds like a
summer loving, too.
It does.
I can't pull it off.
Were there any movie moments at your camp?
No, dude, there's two. The only two stories I remember from that is, Some counselor hit this kid with like a dodgeball in the face or something.
Ooh.
And I was just like, they're all walking out. This is like the one moment in my life I was the biggest snitch ever. They're all just sitting in the like in the hallway, and like the head counselor dude is like, who did it? All this stuff. And I'm just walking by and I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, oh, somebody threw a ball at the kid. And I was like, oh, it was Keegan. Peace, I'm out. See you guys tomorrow. So I remember
you,
that. And that was like hilarious to me.
Yo, you gotta drive Keegan into a song. Yo.
And
I
then,
saw you, Keegan.
And then another time was we had our kids doing like American Idol, and they were just like singing. They did like you ever see Step Brothers?
Course.
You know, like the opera songs,
oh,
like the
yeah.
famous opera song
sure.
at the end that
Boats
they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the
but it's
the,
a real oh, yeah, yeah.
That one. We had like our kids did that for like their like show.
I feel like as three musicians
to, like,
we should know the name of that piece. It's very
oh,
famous.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Is that Voltaire?
I definitely should have referenced it as the thing from Step Brothers. That's
yeah,
like so disrespectful.
Hey, however you get exposed to the arts is fine.
There's someone from 300 years ago right now flipping it.
Yeah.
What?
What the fuck?
Are you kidding me? Like, I bet they didn't sound like that. They were probably
maybe
Italian.
Maybe if they saw the movie, they would feel differently.
It is brilliant. It is a brilliant film. So I, for the first time, I posed a fan question for you. So this came from Kevin O'Brien.
Okay.
A fan of yours from Waterloo, Ontario.
Okay.
I don't know, so you got people in Canada. He says, As a Raptors fan, I know what it's like going from a joke organization to being the champs. Does Jade think that will ever in caps, happen for the Knicks while James Dolan is the owner?
Oh. That's such a loaded question, because what happened in Toronto is like super interesting. It's a complete anomaly.
That's true.
You know what I mean? You have like Dwayne Casey and Ujiri kind of building this team up year after year. You had somebody who was actually down to stay with DeMar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who was like, I want to be the best Raptor ever.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Totally committed.
But clearly could not get like the job done. Like their solution to that was like have him shoot more threes, and that was not his game.
Look.
You know,
not a good look.
So they traded him for Kawhi, which is that. It's just so rare that stuff like that happens.
Yeah, that was kind of an anomaly, sure.
Kawhi Leonard will never have a contract again where he could get traded to a team that he doesn't want to go to.
Of course not. No,
you know what I mean? That's like, and I think, like you were talking before, which is like most interesting thing about the NBA is those players have taken like complete ownership of
that
league. There's not another sport like that where they realize like we are the brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, with football, baseball, that's not necessarily, the teams are like the brand.
Certainly.
You know what I mean? And
certainly.
It's way different with the NBA now.
Sure.
I think the Knicks could do that with James Dolan. In terms of get like a big free agent signing, like the stuff that they thought was going to happen this summer.
I think the question poses would be, I mean, what happened to Toronto was getting over the hump.
Right.
It was winning. So I think the real question is, like, simply, will the Knicks win a championship with James Dolan as owner?
They could.
Okay.
I think they could. That's probably optimistic of me to say. But it definitely won't happen the same way that Toronto needed one more piece.
Sure.
And they were able to get that piece. I don't think the Knicks will get like
that. Would
big...
be the Knicks like 2-3 years from now, who have a really nice developed core that adds that complimentary piece
to
bring them over.
If the Knicks are a championship team, it's going to be with like the people who are like in the organization, the players that are in the organization now. You know what I mean? Like Knox, Frank, RJ Barrett.
Barrett's looking nice.
You know, RJ Barrett looks
looking
great.
Like a cornerstone.
He looks great, yeah.
I mean, that's one thing you give this current administration's done some nice drafting.
Yeah.
If anything, I mean, the Chris Stapps trade, we'll see.
Trade, I'm okay with. Honestly, I'm okay with.
I think in the long game, that's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I think people are like, you know, they see this unicorn, the 7-3 unicorn, pouncing around the court again. They're like, fucking Knicks. But, like, I think, like, 5 years from now, when he can't play more than, like, 40 games a season.
Exactly.
And he becomes a limited player, which
he doesn't seem like
kind
he was ever
going to
be the guy. He seemed like he needed somebody to, you know what I mean?
And
somebody
we'll
else
those
to
picks pan
steal
out,
the show.
You know, like one of those guys. I don't think that's a predetermined factor, but you got that little core, Robinson,
mm-hmm.
Knox, Barrett, little mm-hmm. building. But I think that's what he's asking is, like, you know, I've never been a Knicks fan, but my dad and my brother are hardcore Knicks fans.
Okay.
So I've been following the Knicks, hearing about, you know, the beautiful teams of the early 70s for my father, like, for my entire life.
Yeah.
You know, this was the epitome of Knicks basketball, happened now 40 years ago, 50 years ago at this point. And it seems like every single time they get close, the organization or something happens. You know, like you go back to Amari Stoudemire, Larry Johnson, you know, like Carmelo recently. You know, they make those runs and then something happens with a coach or the owner or a player that just like fucks it up.
I want to pose a crazy question for you.
Lay it on.
So, you know how people believe in like the moon landing being a conspiracy and stuff like that?
Yes.
Have you ever possibly contemplated the early NBA being akin to like pro wrestling?
Ooh.
And like, or like what the Harlem Globetrotters are? Because like that, like, dude, the early 70s Knicks, like, that's some crazy shit. Like, Willis Reed coming out of the tunnel halfway through the game.
Yeah.
I'm here to play now, and then just putting up crazy numbers.
Right.
It's kind of insane.
Thought it was like spectacle.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Like
spectacle. It is. I've just wondered sometimes. I've been like, you know what I mean?
Why not?
Why?
Especially in those days.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You
like
know what I mean?
So many people had such limited access to whatever the hell was going on.
For sure.
Yeah. Why not?
You know, Wilt Chamberlain like putting up 100.
ABA guys literally had like guns in their lockers.
Yeah.
They were like fighting each other in the court and like, yeah, why not? 100%.
That's cool.
I believe in all. I mean, how many times?
You believe in a good conspiracy theory,
No, it's real. The Knicks got Patrick Ewing by bending the envelope.
Right. The lottery is fake.
You know about this?
No.
So this is what happened. Patrick Ewing, king of the Big East.
Right.
The New York Knicks want him so bad. It's like the perfect thing. And this is back in the day when, you know, the lottery was actually a lottery. There was a giant ball with envelopes.
That was the first lottery,
the different
too,
teams.
Right?
Was it?
Was Patrick Ewing the first one?
I'm not sure. And the conspiracy theory was the Knicks envelope was thrown into the ball with great haste to bend the corner. So when they went and fished,
could feel it.
They would get the Knicks one out so they could draft Patrick Ewing and save the Knicks. I don't know. Who knows? What I know is that I don't know. That's what
exactly.
That's what I know. You know James Dolan? Do you know about his band?
Yeah, it was JD
and the
straight
shot.
Straight shot.
He's got a band. And apparently he pays really well.
Dude, have you seen the article about that band like going on tour and stuff like that?
No, I haven't. I've heard a couple insider pieces from someone who like tour managed his band.
Okay.
That the band is very well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
like,
why his...
They have like jets, like private jets.
Yeah.
Like they pay like thousands of dollars to open these huge shows.
So,
like,
yeah. So he actually managed to get himself like legit Nashville musicians because... He'll pay fucking $5,000 a week and give them the best accommodations. And they won't, of course, they're not going to talk shit about the fucking meal. They're paying for private school with the fucking JD in the straight shot. I got to get that job.
For real?
Yeah, dude, for real.
How do I drum? I just bashed Dolan for 10 minutes. I'm never going to get his band now.
We'll edit it out.
What am I going to do? I don't know. I hope for you and my brother and my dad that the Knicks one day.
Yeah.
Get over the hump. Do you like religiously watch? You into like every game?
Yeah.
Hardcore into
I watch every game that I can.
Good.
Missed only like one this year.
So as a Knicks fan, like what do you think's I'm a big time Nets fan.
Okay.
And you know, there's not really a beef because we've never been good at the same time.
Right.
So believe it or not, there's not really a thing there. But I've been wondering, you know, I'm a season ticket holder for the Nets.
Okay.
And, you know, the first three, four seasons, anytime Nets-Knicks was going on at Barclays, I mean, Knicks fans just grossly outnumber Nets fans at this point. Like, they just take over the stadium because it's such a good, loyal crowd, you know?
And it's so cheap. Well, I don't know about now, but it used to be so cheap.
Still a little cheaper in the Garden.
They get you when they, once you get in, the concessions in Barclays were like insane.
Yeah, but they got great cheesecake.
Insane.
They got Beyond Meat in there now, so that's man. I'm spending too much money because they got Beyond Meats. But I was wondering, like, when are people from Brooklyn who are lifelong Knicks fans going to start making the switch? It's got to happen. It's going to happen. Maybe does it take a youth movement? Like, you know, like the first time like young people get to see them be good.
I don't know if that'll ever happen. Truthfully, because
you're gonna stick it out.
Yeah, because
like,
I feel
how many
like,
ways can a Knicks fan get slapped without leaving?
I mean, it's like when they got Garnett and Paul Pierce and stuff like that,
and Jason Terry.
I feel like that was gonna be the moment that, like, you know what I mean? If you saw that kind of shift, like you're gonna see it go then.
That didn't really pan out.
Yeah, and it did. And they only got to like the second round, I think, right?
Second round once.
Yeah.
First round the year after that, and then...
And that was it.
Tanking for years.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I can't see it happening. I think there was like hope with when the Islanders went there that it was going to be like a new generation of fans. And I just don't think...
Didn't work out either.
Yeah, people just weren't that interested.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's still a transient audience. It's still like, you still see...
I feel like a lot of so like you're from New Jersey, so is that where the Nets like allegiance comes from?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like most of their fans are still people who grew up watching the New Jersey team.
I I actually disagree. I think, okay. Yeah, I think the bulk, you know, you saw it the first couple of years. You saw the people turning over. Uh-huh. There wasn't a lot. And I think that's the reason. Like, that's the thing. And the reason nobody cared about them leaving New Jersey, like, they didn't have a very diehard fan base there either.
Okay.
You know, like, literally, you know, one of the reasons I didn't care about the Nets leaving was I literally walked up to the stadium in 2002 and bought final seats.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like against that's the wild. Fucking Shaq Kobe Lakers.
Yeah.
That's you know what insane. I mean? So, like, so when they were like, yeah, we're moving to Brooklyn, I'm like, oh, good. Like, get out of the swamp, man. Like, you know? I was pissed because they played 2 years in Newark where the Devils play while they were building Barclays. That, for me, was beautiful. I mean, I could literally catch a 7:30 tip. I'd be to wifey, I'd be like, 7:20, I'm getting on the path. I get a cheap-ass seat and go. That was gorgeous.
That's sick.
But no, I do feel like there's a very, unless you live in like a Hoboken or Jersey City, maybe some of the parts like off the Goffles and like Central Jersey, like you might make a consistent trip to Brooklyn to see them. But right. I feel like it has been a redefinition of the crowd, and I think it's a brand new.
Do you feel like there's a lot of When they first moved to Brooklyn and I went there, like I went to a couple games, I would notice there's like a lot of deals like for kids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's panned out well for them?
No, I think they've abandoned it a little. Okay. Yeah, that first year they had the Brooklyn Knight, who was this superhero they tried to market.
Right.
He didn't last more than a year. Right. No, I think they bailed on that quick and kind of went more with like the cool Jay-Z, black colors, hip New York, like as opposed to like old school like old man New York, which they try to always market the Garden as.
Right.
I mean, you see that billboard they put up?
Which
Kyrie
one?
Irving staring at the Garden right now. Like
no,
a 10-story version of Kyrie Irving is staring at the Garden right now.
That makes me angry.
Talking shit.
That makes me angry.
Yes. See, and this is what I like. The Nets-Knicks thing. It's going to start.
It'll definitely start soon. See, I appreciate like the Kevin Durant thing where he says like it's not cool to be a Knick.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh,
I feel like that's the best part about this league and like where they're really taking like they have control over the league. You know what I mean? Like they create more stuff than just like think about like the free agency in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like that itself is like a spectacle now.
Oh yeah.
You know what
it's
I mean?
Year round full on spectacle. And these guys understand it as well as anyone. Like LeBron is always doing something about once a month in the off season that like raises headlines and gets him in the, like it's not a fucking mistake.
Yeah.
You know, the guy gets paid, I forget what the exact number is, but he's paid like many hundreds of thousands of dollars per letter to write a tweet.
That's crazy.
For someone. Per letter.
Yeah.
Because his, like, I forget what his exact fan base is on Twitter, but a company reaches more people directly by having LeBron James write a tweet than they do
commercial.
Starting an amazingly huge, like, national ad campaign,
right.
Putting posters everywhere in this. Like,
yeah, no, it's just math.
Yeah. You just pay him $10
and there's more value to it.
He's gonna be president. All right. So one question I had to sneak in. I know you're like now always. I mean, you're just kind of put into like an emo category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you like it or not, I guess you're there. I don't know if that's self described or not. And you know, there's this like long history of emo from like Long Island and from where you're from,
right?
Or what people like think is emo, and then there's old people like me and Brad who think emo is something totally different, you know? So I'm like, what is it to you?
What is emo to me?
Yeah.
Growing up, emo to me was like My Chemical Romance.
Right.
The Used. That was like what my idea of emo music was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So when you were a kid, those were like the seminal emo bands. Those were like...
Right. That was like the first time I ever heard the term like emo.
Right.
And then, I mean, now like feel like since 2014, stuff like that, that's kind of like started touring in like 2012 and 2014. It was weird because I feel like in 2012, 2013, nobody was really being like, we weren't like, oh, this is like the emo scene, or this is an emo band, or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then like certain bands just started kind of getting bigger, and then it was like, this is the emo revival. So you're like, okay,
right,
this is what emo is now today. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know. Emo is a weird thing.
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange.
I don't mind being called an emo band, because I feel like the people who like subscribe to that genre or whatever really hold the music like super high sentimentally.
Right, you know what I mean?
Like in high regard. So like, I don't mind that. I guess people think that it's like, in terms of like a commercial thing, that it will like bring your band down.
Just by being labeled emo.
Like I like feel like there's a lot of bands that I would consider emo or whatever that are like, oh, we're not emo, we're an indie rock band.
Right, you know what I mean?
And like,
still trying to get college radio play.
Yeah. Whatever. You know what I mean?
I mean, after all these years, it's like now, you know, we're in like what? Like the fifth generation of like what has been dubbed a certain type of emo. And like, I mean, if there's anything, I guess, that ties through all five, it's kind of starting to have nothing to do with music.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with what you're saying.
Right.
Which I think it's taking on it's kind of like a punk rock.
It's an emotional resonance, I think, more than the sound.
Right. So like how you can be a punk band ethically without sounding like the Sex Pistols or something like that. And maybe it's, I mean, do you think maybe that's it? Like it's the content of the message rather than the music itself? Because obviously your music has nothing to do with My Chemical Romance, which has nothing to do with Taking Back Sunday, which has nothing to do with Satia, which has nothing to do with Embrace, you know what I mean? Like, and it just keeps going back. Like, is it, you think that's it maybe?
I mean, if you want to get into that and like how it's evolved like that, I think it's just like a bit of OCD in the culture and people being like, we need to, what is this? We need to, you know what I mean? That has to be something, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's not ska, and it's not really, it's not very punk, you know what I mean? So it's emo, you know what I mean? This, like, this band is playing small clubs, and you know what I mean? Their merch looks like this, so they're emo.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they play with this band and that band.
Gotcha.
I feel like that's a big thing now, too, that I see is, like, if you tour with within a certain scene of bands or something like that, like then that's what you are to like these kids.
You know what I mean?
Like,
oh yeah, they need a way to identify it.
There's like my friend's band, Just Friends, is like people like when they first started playing, they have it's like they're kind of like a funk pop punk like hybrid band to me. But they have horns, so like when they first started playing, they were ska, you know what I mean? And then they started getting on these tour packages with other like so-called emo bands, so now they're emo. But then the kids who are really into emo are like, that's not emo.
That's not emo.
You know what I mean?
But the band itself never did anything.
Never said a single word about anything.
Right.
Yeah. Except maybe please don't call us ska.
Fair enough.
but so it's like,
so you think it's more of like a micromanaging of classification and distinction?
Yeah, it seems like that. And like
people need a hashtag.
Yeah. And it's just like I've checked out, there's like R emo is like a Reddit, a subreddit or something like that. That like I've scoped out a couple times. And it's just like kind of picking hairs at like, is this band emo? Why are we talking about this band in here?
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, at this point, it just seems a bit like we need to be able to categorize every single thing. Because if we, you know what I mean?
A little tired at this point.
That's kind of, that's kind of how I look at it.
It is getting to that point, like punk got to at a certain point, you know, where it's just like, it's about the ethos, right? Like you can sound like any number of different things,
right,
but it's about like what you stand for and how you present yourself and shit like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just getting to that point, right? Or even I see these, to bring up basketball again, it was kind of funny. You just had a rap battle in the NBA going on, and it was between Damian Lillard, Portland Trailblazers, who's a young guy in his 20s, has kind of like a modern
style of hip hop. You know, he uses the trap beats and shit like that. And he had a beef with Shaq, you know, who fucking rocks the 90s hard. Like, Fushnikins, battle rap, like, that's his style, real clunky. And they made diss tracks to each other, a couple of these.
And you say, like, Kobe won you those titles?
Right? Exactly. But Dame's never won a title, so I thought that was kind of a rough road to go down with Shaq. You don't want to fuck with Shaq with titles. He has, like, three finals MVPs or something. But what was funny about that is when I'm reading, like, you know, the Twitter threads and stuff about this, he's literally, like, an old man hip-hop thing supporting Shaq. You know, the guys from the 90s who were all about, like, you know, New York, like, I'm Nas, I'm Eric B., I'm Rakim, I'm, like, the old school. And then, like, the new school kids are all like, yo, Dame smoked him. Dame Dollar, he's the shit, you know? And, like, even in hip-hop, you know, like, like, literally those, and their beats and their flow and everything had nothing to do with each other. They were literally, like, two different kinds of music that are just in this, like, hip-hop. That's it. It's so big. It goes on for so long. It just, like, grows into weird shit. What do you even call anything anymore?
It's all music, baby.
There was, like, a thing with the that baby Lakers team a couple years ago where they were talking about that, too. They were, like,
oh, really?
They were just like, oh, yeah, Tupac's trash. All You know what I mean?
Right, like, stuff
like
that.
Like, Future's the greatest rapper ever. Yeah, so, you know what I mean? So
I kind of love when I see that shit, though, because that's, like, that was, like, me at, like, record shows when I was, like, 12, talking to these guys, being like, yo, I'm sorry. Steely Dan is bullshit, man. He's got to get the fuck, you fucking kid. You hear those razors playing in 7-8 the whole time, right? You fucking freak out. I'm like, sorry, bro. Reeling into years. It's all right. It's all right. is that a good place to stop?
Yeah, it sounds great, all right, man.
Cool.
Well, thanks for showing up.
Yeah,
thank you guys
fun.
For having
thanks,
me,
Jay.
For real.
Yeah.
Well, that was nice.
Oh, yeah. A little too much sports talk for me, Benny.
Yeah.
But I know you really enjoyed that.
I see you put on your John Starks jersey while we were doing this. Good
my
for
gym
you.
Shorts. You put on little, my shorty shorts.
You got little gym shorts? I bet you did. You probably did rock above the knees when you played, I'm sure. You probably
Dude, I had
like,
to.
You looked
70s
like John
and 80s.
Stockton out there. You probably looked like a. You look crazy. Well, I was so happy that Jade came by to do the interview with us. He's still supporting. Basking in the Glow, excellent record on Triple Crown, which Pitchfork called Enlightened Emo.
Oh boy.
I really like him and his songs, but Pitchfork.
They gotta come up with something.
But also check out Jade. He's on tour in March. He's at the Fillmore in Philly, March 11th, Union Stage in DC on the 12th, Paradise in Boston the 13th. And back in New York at the Warsaw in Brooklyn on the 15th.
There you go.
Just sold out Bowery Ballroom, too.
Ooh, nice.
Jade's killing it.
Hell yeah.
He's doing good. So we thank him for, and I'm glad we were able to broker some like Long Island, New Jersey peace negotiations.
Yeah.
This might have long-term effects. It's like Pawnee and Eagleton.
Just think what the two of you could do together, Jersey and Long Island United.
We're like Rocky and Ivan Drago at the end of Rocky IV, just solving the Cold War right at the end of a boxing match. Isn't it great?
That's a fucking great analogy.
So thanks, everyone's still listening.
Yeah, we're sorry that this is kind of another interim episode. We're not trying to string you along. We just still have a few things to sort out, and we want to be able to come at you strong when we do come back weekly. But we can say this, we are going to come back strong. We've got a couple really good episodes lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be coming at you weekly very shortly. Just hang in there with us, man, please. and we should say that by the time this comes out, we may have a Patreon page back up. It just depends on how close we are to relaunching.
This isn't pro. Just say we'll have it.
We'll have it. Go to patreon.com/goingofftrack, or is it patreon.com/offtrack? Either way, there's links on the website, and keep your eyes open. Stay with us. We promise to deliver.
Thanks for tuning in.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.